Well, good morning, church. Good morning. So good to see everyone this morning. Good to be with you. I know we're still missing quite a few, and I hope that they're doing well, and certainly we look forward to their return, but we are thankful for your presence. Whether you are a member here or you're visiting here, we want you to know that your presence here with the body, it means quite a bit to everyone around you. We sometimes don't express that as often as we should. So it's good to be with you. It's good to be together. And if you're joining us online, it's good to have you with us as well. It has been quite the weekend, hasn't it? And if you had bet Tennessee losing by 30 last night at South Carolina, then you'd be a wealthy person today. I don't think anybody might have done that. They were a 22-point favorite and lost by way more than that. So it was, you know, things happen, don't they? You just never know what's going to happen today. This year's Kentucky Derby winner. I'm not a horse racing fan, but the winner of this year's Kentucky Derby was a horse called Rich Strike, and he was not even in the race, or she, I don't know, the horse was not even in the race until 31 hours before the race because two other horses had to drop out. So this horse gets added last minute. The pre-race odds on this horse were 80-1, meaning that if you'd bet $1 for a Rich Strike to win, you'd won $80. For every dollar you bet, you win $80. Now, that's a crazy long shot. And that horse was worth, you know, most of the horses in that race are worth millions of dollars, were paid millions of dollars to be there. And that horse was just a few thousand dollars. I mean, I know that sounds a lot to me for a horse, but by racehorse standards, it was nothing. Or there's this crazy story about an Australian man. His name's Bill Morgan. Now, you may have seen this before, but Bill Morgan, he was actually clinically dead for 14 hours. He was in a serious car accident that left him in a coma, and doctors examined him and gave him zero chance of surviving and recovering out of the coma. Bill promptly woke up and was fine. After he woke up, he was feeling good about himself, and within a short span of time, he goes and he bought himself a scratch-off lottery ticket, won $18,000. Now, normally, that's not a newsworthy sum, right? I mean, winning $18,000, that happens, I'm sure, on a somewhat regular basis in a lottery, but because of his recent car accident, and because he had been clinically dead for that length of time and just woken up out of this coma, and then he goes and buys a lottery ticket and he wins. So one of the local news stations decided to run a story about it. And in fact, you can go online, you can watch the video about it, you can find it on YouTube and other places. It's one of those feel-good news stories that they run at the end of a newscast when they're filling time. You know what I'm talking about? So they go and they get Bill, and they're like, Bill, take us to the store, and then you just kind of narrate what happened, right? So Bill goes with the newscast down to the store where he bought the lottery ticket. He says, I went over here and I bought a lottery ticket. He buys the lottery ticket. He goes, and I went over here and I scratched it off. And then as he's scratching it off, he suddenly stops. Then he looks at the camera and he says, I just won $250,000. I'm not joking. Twice in a row, this guy wins the lottery. I mean, that's just crazy. I don't even know what the odds are. I'm sure the odds of winning one time are astronomical. Winning twice in a row while you're doing it live on a newscast, that's crazy, right? Life is uncertain, isn't it? We think we know what's going to happen next, but we never know what's going to happen next. We think it's going to work out this way, and sometimes it might, but oftentimes it doesn't. We never really know. No, you may have plans for later today. Maybe you're going to go home and cook, or you've already cooked something, and your plans are, this is what's going to happen with the family, or we're going to go out to eat, or maybe your plans are to go watch the football game somewhere, or something along those lines, and you have these plans sort of set, and maybe you have plans for later in this week for Thanksgiving. Our family's going to do this, this, and this, and I'm making this, and they're making that, and we're going to get together and do this, and it may work out that way. But it may well not work out exactly that way, right? We, in life, go through unexpected losses, and we have sometimes unexplainable victories. Life is unpredictable at every single turn, except for one. as we continue our study through the book of Ecclesiastes, the preacher there reminds us of the uncertainty of life in every respect. You know, he says money comes and goes, crops boom or fail, our health is good or bad, safety, sometimes we're good, sometimes we're not. Everything is unpredictable, he says, but there is something that we can absolutely count on for certain 100% of the time. And this is what he said. This is in Ecclesiastes chapter 9. So I reflected on all this and concluded that the righteous and the wise and what they do are in God's hands. But no man knows whether love or hate awaits him, right? You can do good, and he says, but you know, you just never really know. He says, all share a common destiny. The righteous and the wicked, the good and the bad, the clean and the unclean, those who offer sacrifices and those who do not. As it is with the good man, so it is with the sinner. As it is with those who take oaths, so those who are afraid to take them. This is the evil in everything that happens under the sun. The same destiny overtakes all. All hearts of men, moreover, are full of evil, and there is madness in their hearts while they live. And afterwards, they join the dead. So, I don't know about you, but I have never seen this particular passage on a bumper sticker. I have not seen it cross-stitched onto a pillow. It's just not, it's really inspirational, isn't it? I mean, it's one of those passages we don't like. It makes us uncomfortable. I mean, he's pointing out some obvious truths, things that you and I, that we all know. I think if I asked you this morning, does anybody think they're not going to die? No, we'd say, no, we all know we're all going to die. And yet, that's what he's saying. Good people, bad people, rich people, poor people, men, women, young, old, everybody dies. And you can work real hard and you can live a good life and you can do all the right things and you're still going to die. The only thing that is certain in life is death. That's what he's saying. And death is indiscriminate. Death doesn't care if you're good or bad or if you're a Christian or if you're a pagan, if you're faithful or an atheist. Everyone comes to the same end. Right, we know this, but boy, we don't like talking about this. It's a pretty morbid topic. It's depressing. Dwelling on that sort of thought leads people to despair, to hopelessness. And what he says is madness. He talks about how everyone's hearts are full of evil. The two are not connected. Death and evil are not unconnected. The fact that death looms over us all leads to evil. Knowing that we're all going to die, that thought in and of itself leads some people to commit evil. Those two thoughts are inextricably linked. But the writer of Ecclesiastes, he doesn't write this to remind us of death. He assumes we all know that death exists, right? He writes it to remind us of life. One of the problems we have in our culture is that we don't really know how to die well. We don't sit well with that thought. We live as if death, the only certainty, we live as if death were uncertain. And we live as if all the uncertainties, money, health, wealth, blessings, we live as if all of those uncertainties were certain. We pretend death might happen, but that these other things are for sure, when in fact the opposite is true. And he says that's no way to live, and it's certainly no way to die well. That's what he's teaching us about here, how to die well, because all that stuff that we are working for, all the certainties in our minds, he says all those are going to be left behind and forgotten. In fact, he goes on to say, you know, everybody's going to die. And yet we know that, and we still want to live. He said, you know, we'd rather be an alive dog than a dead great person, because at least the dog's above ground. In a way, what we would prefer, and this would be fairer in our minds, is if we were kind of like the gods. And we think that if I do this, this, and this, then I should get that. If I'm a good husband, good wife, good worker, good parent, good student, good neighbor, good citizen. If I do all these things, I should get that. But it doesn't always add up that way. We think we can make that happen if we just follow sort of the creation recipe. You know, this is the creation for how you make that. But life does not work that way, does it? There's a poem, The Epic of Gilgamesh. I'm sure you've all memorized it, so I'm just going to remind you a little bit about it. It's an old poem. In fact, it dates back all the way to the time of Abraham, maybe even before the time of Abraham. Really old, and it was a really well-known poem in the ancient world. They would have been familiar with it, certainly passingly familiar, some of them intimately familiar with this poem. And in the poem, at one point, the hero of the poem, the epic, he loses his best friend. His best friend dies. And so now he's trying to respond to that by searching for immortality, right? He gets reminded of death. He's like, yeah, death is looming out there. I don't want any part of death. So he goes on a quest for immortality. And this quest sort of leads him eventually to the Garden of the Gods. And he comes to a tavern, so to speak, in the Garden of the Gods. And there's a woman there, and she sort of gives him some advice. And she says to him, Gilgamesh, you will never find the life that you are looking for. When the gods created man, they allotted to him death, but life they retained for their own keeping. As for you, Gilgamesh, fill your belly with good things. Day and night and day, dance and be merry, feast and rejoice, let your clothes be fresh, bathe yourself in water, cherish the little child that holds your hand, and make your wife happy in your embrace, for this too is the lot of man. And in the poem, she's sort of a worldly person, and her advice sounds really worldly to us, doesn't it? But she's telling him, we're not gods. Things are not going to work out according to our plans, even in a way that we believe ought to be just. Like, this ought to be the way things turned out. And yet, we all know people who are good people. Like, right, they're good spouses, they're good workers, they're good parents, they take care of themselves, they take care of others, only to have life chew them up and spit them out. You ever know people like that? The man who I would say he taught me to preach, he made me start preaching when I was a kid, but he was a really good man. He was the father of one of my friends, and we had a little young men's training thing, and he was not a professional preacher. He worked in agriculture. He taught agriculture to prisoners was his vocation. And their house was always exciting because they had sheep and farm implements. We climbed all over everything and had a big time out there. And the dad was always just super patient with us. And he was the same way when we sat down in these Bible classes that he would teach us how to put together a sermon in a really basic sort of way that a 13 or 12-year-old me could understand. And I always thought he was the best man. He was super good to his kids, super good to his wife, yet they never had any money, drove old beat-up vehicles. Life seemed to just not work out the way I thought would be fair for Mr. David. We know people like that. And I bet you know people on the flip side, too. People who do, like, the exact wrong things. They take advantage of others. They live selfishly, maybe even cruelly, and they aren't particularly smart. They're not particularly hardworking, and yet things just seem to work out in their favor. Maybe they were born into a wealthy family, or they happen to be in the right place at the right time to get a great job, or they happen to win the lottery. I don't know, but things just seem to work out in their favor. Things seem to go for them for whatever reason. Things just seem to work out for them, and they're terrible human beings, right? Life is not fair. So what are we supposed to do? Just curl up in a sad ball of despair? Or I mean, just give up? I mean, what? But that's not what the preacher is getting at all. Listen as he continues, and he gives us the cure for our despair. He says in verses 7 through 10, go, eat your food with gladness, drink your wine with a joyful heart, for it is now that God favors what you do, Always be clothed in white. Always anoint your head with oil. Enjoy life with your wife, whom you love. All the days of this meaningless life that God has given you under the sun, all your meaningless days. For this is your lot in life and in your toilsome labor under the sun. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. For in the grave where you're going, there's neither working nor planning nor knowledge nor wisdom. The secret to living life well in an unfair world is to completely flip our priorities. We exchange our certainties for uncertainties. To live life not forgetting about death, not pretending as if death is not going to happen, but to live life in light of death. And to know that everything we are experiencing today is a gift, so we ought to savor it. That's the message. We live life and we grasp and we cling. We say, I have this, I want to hold on to it, and I want to keep it. And he's like, no, you've got to live life with those blessings in an open hand, because God could take those at any moment. We tend to live like life is one of those all-you-can-eat buffets. You ever been to one of those? Maybe at the Chinese restaurant, or maybe you've been to some other places that have all-you-can-eat buffets. My wife doesn't let me go to those anymore, but they're really good. Right? And what we like to do is we find, one dish that, or two dishes or five dishes, whatever, something in there that we really like, right? I mean, when you've got a whole bunch of options, eventually you'll find something you really like. And we live life like that. We're like, oh, this is what I really like. And so I'm just going to get as much of it as I can. I'm going to eat it all up so I can go back and get more. And sort of like Thanksgiving. Right? Oh man, this turkey and dressing is the best. I've got to finish it quick so I can go get more. Right? Or this pecan pie or whatever it is your family does on Thanksgiving. The problem is that we have these plates in front of us, and nothing on that plate is guaranteed to be there when we go back. It's not an all-you-can-eat buffet at all. So instead of gobbling up as fast as we can, what the writer of Ecclesiastes says to do is to savor each morsel. Chew it slowly. Enjoy every moment of this great stuff you have in front of you. Some people have this misguided notion, and I understand why they have it, because, and maybe you've had this same thought too, they have this idea that God is some sort of cosmic killjoy, that God does not want us really to enjoy everything. What he really wants us to do is just be good, get through, die, and go to heaven. That's all life is about, is just be good, don't do the bad stuff, get through life and die so you can go to heaven, and then it'll be all right. That God doesn't want you to enjoy your life too much. That God goes through the all-you-can-eat buffet and he takes away all the good dishes and says, no, these are bad for you, these are bad for you, these are bad for you. I don't want you to have any of this. That God instead wants us to subsist on some sort of tasteless gruel like Oliver Twist. But nothing could be further from the truth. God has given you and me amazing blessings. He has given us beautiful, wonderful, fantastic gifts. Every one of us. But they are gifts that are not guaranteed for tomorrow. They're gifts, but there's no guarantee on them. And so they are gifts that God wants us to appreciate and to enjoy because he's given them to us. He says God has already approved. He's gave you this so that you can enjoy it. Enjoy it. So in taking your next meal, whatever you're going to do after church this morning, you're going to go get lunch somewhere or go home and cook or whatever it is, whatever you're going to have for your meal, take that meal and enjoy each bite. Savor each morsel. Appreciate what you have on your plate. And tomorrow, or maybe even later today, some of you are going to go to work, whatever your work is. Some of you work jobs in a factory like David talked about earlier, and some of you work jobs behind a desk, and some of you work jobs in schools or in plants, or you work all kinds of places. But whatever that is, he says, do your best at it. Do your best to do a great job, whatever it is. And then have the ability to step back from whatever it is you've done. To step back and appreciate what you've been able to accomplish. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. And then appreciate that. I mean, you've done something amazing. God has given you the strength or the knowledge or the ability. He has given you the gifts to make something, to do something. Appreciate that. It's having the ability to look at the people you love, your spouse, your kids, your parents, your friends, your neighbors. It's to look at those people that you love and really, really appreciate that person. To savor that person. Because as we all know, there's no guarantee for tomorrow. Now, I've just preached this lesson that I think is pretty faithful to the text here in Ecclesiastes. And now I need to make a confession, because my wife and kids are, if you go talk to them after this sermon, they're going to tell you that I am terrible at this. I am not a person who savors each morsel very well. I tend to savor the really good bites and try to get through the rest of it, right? I'm much more of a roller coaster kind of guy. When I'm up, I'm really up. When I'm down, I'm really down, and leave me alone. That's the way I am. I tend to get distracted when I'm not way up. I tend to get really distracted and miss the things I should be savoring, miss the things I should be appreciating and enjoying. And I don't think I'm alone in this. I don't kid myself that I'm the only one who messes up this way. In fact, that's probably a pretty fair description for many in our culture, many in our society. We kind of miss the blessings, don't we? But the book of Ecclesiastes is not, it's not having any of that. It hits us squarely in the face with the reality that everything we have in life, everything we hold dear, everything we're looking forward to or appreciate already or have underappreciated already, all of those gifts, all of those blessings that God has given to us to be enjoyed and appreciated now, none of that is guaranteed. In fact, none of anything is guaranteed. Your day of life today is not guaranteed. Your plan to go to work tomorrow is not guaranteed. The health of your spouse and your kids, none of it isn't guaranteed. So appreciate it today, because the only thing that is certain is the end. We need to live life not as if death doesn't exist, but live life in light of death. Because that is the certainty God has given us. Your life was meant to be enjoyed today. What a blessing that is from God. And if we can pray for you, to lift you up, if you're ready to become a child of God who gives gifts for you to appreciate and enjoy, if you want to put on Jesus Christ in baptism, have your sins washed away, and rise to walk in a new life with purpose as a family of that God, if there's any way we can help you this morning, won't you come now as we stand and as we stand.